are a very valued member of this committee. So we must avoid conflict. Okay, honourable members, today we'll be dealing with the presentation by the department on job losses, and then deal with the report on the oversight Northwest, deal with the report on the study tour to Australia, and then deal with the adoption of the minutes of the 23rd of August, and subsequently we'll make announcement. That's what we have today. Any mover?
Thank you very much, Chair. I move that, Chair, we adopt the agenda as it is, Chair, with no addition.
Any second? Honorable Chapter.
Thank you, Chair. I second the agenda.
Okay. Having that being moved, welcome DJ with your team. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me take.
Sorry, DJ, you will bear with us. I've never been in a venue like this one. It's more like I'm in a council chamber. Me and you, people, we must just apologize to them. Sometimes we can have the roughest of voices, but feel free, there's nothing we can do. This is the venue, it's the venue, like you are just deep down in a mine. But because we work with mining, I'm sure you are used to this environment. Okay.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me take this opportunity to convey our to all honorable members and colleagues in attendance this morning. I must indicate, Chair, that we have the following officials from the department that have attended this very important meeting. The Chief Financial Officer. We also have the Acting Deputy Director General, MPP. We have the Chief Director that is responsible for Western Region, but we have a consolidated presentation in terms of other regions as well pertaining to the presentation of today. We also have the Ministry in attendance. In fact, in terms of the presentation outline, Chair, with your indulgence, I would not want to go through each and every point. I think it is self-explanatory. I would want to proceed to the next page, which is actually the background. But, Chair, I think we have touched on a very important point when you started with your opening remarks, that I'm not going to repeat what you have said, except just to appreciate the positive growth that we have, or that we are experiencing within the mining industry. And so we'd also try to come up with innovative measures to ensure that there's no decline. We continue with this good performance, working together with the chamber and also the license holders. Chair, in terms of the background, it is just a reference to the establishment of the Minerals and Petroleum Board, which actually gives a clear indication of the powers that they are entrusted with to perform various functions as prescribed by the MPRDA. Honorable members would also remember that in 2015 August, there was a stakeholder declaration that was signed with 10 interventions, and a tax team was established. And after that, in 2016, the board assumed responsibility for overseeing implementation of the declaration in line with the legislative mandate to manage retrenchments. that is in terms of Section 52. Now, our presentation would, by and large, give some background or progress report around the implementation of Section 52. With your indulgence, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, I would like to take this opportunity to invite the Chief Director to take us through the presentation. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Honorable Members, and thank you, DG, for the background. What we're going to talk to is Section 189 of the Labor Relations Act, again, being utilized in line with Section 52 of the MPRDA. Honorable Members would know that Section 52 places an onus on the mining right holder to inform the Minister of any possible retrenchments, while Section 189 also places the duty on the employer to notify the CCMA and the Department of Labor on possible retrenchments. In November 2016, the Labor Court ruled between Sibanye Gold and the National Union of Mine Workers that neither these two of these legislations are trumping on each other, and that Section 52 and Section 189 process can run concurrently. So we have made strides in achieving that. In an effort to align the two pieces of legislation, we then agreed with the Department of Labor and the CCMA that all notices must be sent to the department at the commencement of the 60 days as prescribed in the labor 60 days prescribed in the Section 189 of the Labor Relations Act, and that a similar notice must be given to the department. So what that Act seeks to achieve is that when the CCMA is notified, the minister is also notified, then the board can come up with intervention measures. The basis for the alignment was to explore alternatives to retrenchment and attempt to save jobs, and where that's not possible, to assist retrenched workers to access support mechanisms as prescribed by the Labor Relations Act. We thought we'd give a bit of a background on the status of the mining industry dating back to 1986. Where employment peaked at about 829,000 jobs being created, and we had a decline of employment in 2004, and the decline was at about 400,000 employees. Since the promulgation of the MPRDA in 2004, we have seen growth in the employment in the mining sector, which peaked to a tune of 530,000 in 2012. On slide number 6, we are trying to show the industries that have contributed to job creation and the total job creation between 1994 and 2014. And we are showing that the diamond industry has historically been employing less than 100,000 employees because the nature of the business that is not too labor intensive, whereas the gold sector has declined from 400,000 to just above 200,000 employees, and the PGM sector has seen an increase from 100,000 employees to just under 200,000 employees. We thought also we should be honest with the committee and show examples of generic causes that we have observed on job losses. That committee members would be aware that most of the mining industry investors is multinational companies, and really in the investment community, focus tends to be on declaration of dividends to shareholders than retaining employees. Now, the one other thing that we have picked up when supporting the board through the Section 52 process is that when retrenchments are announced by the mining sector, we find that the head office structures of the mining companies are bloated than at operations. And that affects, most of the time, organized labor would raise that as a concern. But indeed, we have seen that the bloated structures of employees are not, of companies are not sacrificed, but the employees themselves are being sacrificed by the mining companies. And we have the 2010 mining charter prescribed a 5% of skills levy. But what we have found is that the training that is supposed to go to employees in the mining industry really happens for senior executives, and that amounts to issues like traveling overseas for training and attending training courses overseas, rather than the industry focusing on the development of artisans and general mine workers. We thought we would show also that the following companies that we have in the presentation on slide number 8 have declared dividends, and they have demonstrated bloated structures at their head offices and have announced retrenchments, and the companies are listed on slide number 8. So this is a concern for us. When engaging most of these all these companies, we have classified them the issue of bloated structures. We have we understand that the dividends have to be declared to shareholders, but they could come up with measures to assist in mitigating these job losses. So the companies are listed in slide number 8. Other examples of generic causes to job losses are suppressed demand. We've had really a slow global economic recovery following our recession in 2007, and we have really a recycling and of commodities and substitution of commodities. And what we mean by that is that companies would find maybe alternatives, multinationals would find alternatives to utilization of maybe PGMs to other commodities for catalytic converters. We have also seen the supply dynamics as a challenge, the declining grades and the increased debts, and this we have seen in the platinum and the gold sector. So what we picked up there when we analyzed is that the depths of mining are quite high, but the grading of the commodity becomes low, and then that automatically affects productivity. And while that does that, it has an impact on the cost and administrative prices, and this also leads to labor challenges. The other cause that we found, we've identified, is on price dynamics. I think we can all appreciate that the currency is currently volatile, and commodity prices are depressed, and this has really affected us as an industry. What have we done as a department to manage job losses? Section 52, as I've already spoken to it, requires that the mining right holder must, after consultation with the union or affected employees, notify the minister of any imminent retrenchments. The objective of this is to discuss productivity and profitability issues with the companies, of the companies. And for the companies to provide us with undertakings to establish future forums after conversion of old order mining rights or after new mining rights have been granted. Ideally, the social and labor plan requires that future forums should comprise management, workers, or their representatives. And the roles of the future forum are the following but not limited: to promote ongoing discussion between worker representative and employers about the future of the mines, to look ahead to identify problems, challenges, and possible solutions with regard to productivity and employment, to develop turnaround and repayment strategies to help reduce job losses and to improve business sustainability, and to implement strategies agreed upon by both employer and workers. We need to be open and honest to the members that not all feature forums are functional, because when you discuss productivity and finances, obviously, companies then become worried to disclose their financials to employees, even in instances where you find that employees are shareholders through employee share schemes. But when we monitor our social and labor plans, we emphasize and we direct companies to ensure that future forums are in place, and where they are not in place, we give them statutory notices to that effect. I think the DG has already touched on this slide, that the minister has convened stakeholders, being organized business, labor, and other government departments, and this, we signed a stakeholder declaration in August 2015, and the declaration has been in application for a period of 2 years, but now it's under the stewardship of the board in line with Section 52. Initially, when the declaration was signed, we had resistance from our Chamber of Mine members, but when the board engages them now on the job losses, some have demonstrated the willingness to adhere to the stakeholder declaration, and we will show challenges in the next slide. The interventions I think members are conversant with, and I would like to really talk to the activities that have been taken today. Intervention number one talks to the delaying of implementation of retrenchments. The stakeholder declaration reinforced the CCMA processes and resulted in about 16,000 jobs being held in abeyance while other available alternatives were being considered. And we've seen this happening in Samanco and Twickenham, which is an Anglo mine. Acceleration of concurrent rehabilitation. Here the activity that we are doing is to develop a plan for the utilization of rehabilitation funds for concurrent rehabilitation at this certain advanced stage. But if companies had a stable future forums, the following challenge would not exist, because then the companies outsource the concurrent rehabilitation to contractors, and the contractors tend to use their organized labor on the basis that they are their own labor force, and this is on the basis that mine workers are not trained in respect of rehabilitation. But if future forums were all in place and sustainable, mine workers could be trained also in respect of rehabilitation. The facilitation of distressed sale assets, I must apologize that this slide looks quite incomplete, but I will talk to the challenges. The decision to, activities that are involved in here, is that the decision to restructure and unbundle mining assets, particularly by large multinational corporations, presents a new era for emergence of new and transformed mining companies to drive the national development imperatives. And to this extent, the department has been championing the development of framework to enable seamless transition to mitigate the impact of retrenchment. What we have picked up as a challenge here is that companies would still be having good grades of ore body in the mining asset. And when we introduce this as an alternative to them to mitigate job losses, because they would come and say the finances of the company are not well, mining methods need to change. So when we introduce the facilitation of distressed assets to them, then they come up with a different angle of maybe saying it would be costly for a new investor to come and take over the asset. we were not planning to close the mine at this stage. So you can see at that level that there's a bit of a disingenuity between in the mining companies. The other intervention in the stakeholder declaration process support for mine workers in the event that job losses cannot be avoided. The activities that we have undertaken there is that the Department of Labor retrenchment response team has been reactivated, and analogs of to the gold crisis phase of the late 1990s to consolidate the services rendered to affected workers, which include the unemployment insurance fund benefits, financial planning advice, training and reskilling, database of ex-employees, as well as counseling. What we're finding is that this normally happens, this doesn't happen in an event where companies do not have a sustainable future for us. The utilization of multinational companies' procurement levy to support employment opportunities for retrenched mine workers, this proposal has been factored into the Mining Charter 3, and it has been addressed there, but it's pending the court case that honourable members would be aware that is going ongoing between the department and the Chamber of Mines. Streamlining the process of downscaling, updating the database, and exploring fiscal instruments. What we do here is that we've aligned business processes underpinning Section 52 of the MPRDA and Section 189 of the Labour Relations Act. The challenges that we find there is that Section 52 requires that companies must only inform the Minister of Retrenchments if it's less than 500 employees. So companies would want to retrench in numbers less than 500 so that they do not have to report to the Minister. But where we learn of these retrenchments, we do enforce Section 52. Investment promotion and market development. The activities that we've embarked on is that the minister set up a PGM task team to consider appropriate interventions to ensure sustainability of the industry. We've been engaging with the manganese industry to develop a Marshall Plan for the mining sector to ensure sustainability, and the State Diamond Trader leads initiatives to advance local beneficiation of diamonds. Examples of what we are doing and participating in are in the Africa Down Under in Australia, China Mining, engagements with local and international investors and operators have been accelerated. Other interventions to save jobs and sustain the industry, the implementation, we're saying as an activity, the implementation of the Mineral Beneficiation Action Plan in terms of the 9-point plan, e.g. for example, the expansion of the platinum group metals beneficiation industry. But what we have decided to do as a department is that where companies are approaching the department to say that they are considering maybe to sell the assets in terms of Section 11 or expand assets so that they can have an extended life of mine in terms of Section 102, we tend to fast-track these applications so that jobs can be saved. And examples of that would be the... Examples of that would be the fuel cell intervention. And then further on the Section 11, what we did with Anglo Gold Ashanti was that we fast-tracked the sale of the Section 11 or from Daulegwa to another entity. Slide number 15 basically talks to Section 102 applications and Section 11 applications, which are the interventions that we've reported on, and that we have made a decision as a department to fast track them. But it talks to really also the benefits that may come in an event that a company wants to increase its mining area, that also the social and labor plan would be affected, and we would expect the companies to amend their social and labor plans. The next slide talks to the actual jobs that have been saved up to 2015. We have been working on data for 2016 and 17, and we are happy to submit that data to the committee. The next few slides talk to the retrenchments that were reported under Section 52, and they date back from 2015. And I must conscientize members that we should be cognizant that the Section 52s that were received before the 16th November 2016, we were dealing with them as a department, and they were not under led by the process of the Minerals Board. But all the Section 52s that we've received from November last year, including the Sibanye one, they have been dealt with under the Minerals Board. So this slide number 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. On slide number 23, this is where we're starting to demonstrate that the board has been involved in dealing with the section 52s, and we're also demonstrating where we were able to save jobs. So slide number 24. This is also where the board was involved, and we are showing also that we were able to save some jobs there. Slide number 25, slide number 26, yeah, up to slide number 27. This is also where the board has been involved. And then I think one of the major concerns would have been that Anglo Gold Ashanti has recently announced that they were going to retrench 8,500 employees. And before the announcement, they came to the department and they were responsible. They spoke to the minister and they informed the minister, and the minister instructed the board to ensure that they work hard to minimize job losses. And I would like to zoom really into the Anglo Gold Ashanti one, that at the end of August this year, Anglo Gold Ashanti put in proposals to the employees, which proposals should be dealt with by end of the month on voluntary severance packages, on minimizing the use of contractors and fixed-term contract employees, on placing a moratorium on recruitment and promotions in the company, and on placement in lower positions in other operations. So there are still operations of Anglo Gold Ashanti that have potential to run through their end of life of mine. And with these mechanisms, we do believe that some of the jobs have potential to be saved. With regard to Sibanye Gold, they have only recently informed the minister and the board that they are going to be retrenching some employees, and the board has still not consulted with Sibanye. So I think the first consultation is starting tomorrow, so we will report in future on it. In conclusion, We would like to say we ensure that future forums are functional and are in place between stakeholders, and we do ensure that companies adhere to Section 52s before they announce retrenchment. And the board on its own ensures that companies adhere to the stakeholder declaration. So when companies come to present, the board puts out the stakeholder declaration and requests companies to show how they can mitigate all the issues. And the minister has directed and the board has implemented that we need to use technical expertise from our state-owned entities to assess the technical and financial reasons on the retrenchment. So with this Anglo Gold Ashanti and Sibanye Gold, that would be happening. We facilitate greater participation by HDSAs and new entrants through the mining charter and the intervention such as a junior. This intervention is that of the junior mining strategy. What we attempt to do here is to encourage HDSAs that have got money to save some of the mines to come in as entrants and to rescue the situation of retrenchments and mines closing down. I thank you.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Chair, I must indicate that we are doing everything in our power, as you can see in our conclusion, that what is key is to ensure that we have these forums that are functional and vibrant, and so that we can be able to mitigate against all these retrenchments that we are faced with. Because we are of the strong view that if we have functional future forums, we'll be able to come up with some measures. I think, Chair, it is also important for me to indicate to honorable members that now, as you are in this meeting, there is actually a meeting of the board, Minerals and Petroleum Board. They are looking at all these cases. I must also indicate that the relationship that you are having with the board, it is quite vibrant and it is helping quite a lot in terms of advising the minister. And the other issue is that we have also empowered the board with some technical expertise. As we can see that we have CEOs that are there to assist, because we have the view that perhaps there are certain things that we need to dig deeper in terms of all these retrenchments that we are having, but we'll continue to work very closely with the mining companies to understand exactly what are the challenges, because you know that when they make their applications, they indicate that we are going to employ so many people, and we have also the mine works program that indicates that what they're going to do and so forth. And so it is also important for us also to make note that it is something that we are looking at, that there must be a clear compliance with all these instruments that have been agreed upon by the stakeholders. And so in those few words, Chair, I would like to thank you very much and honorable members.
Okay. I hope you've got a team that you rely on. Now, let me say this, honorable member. When I spoke to the DG, we found out that we're clashing with the select committee of the NCOP. So I had to speak with the chair of the NCOP to at least excuse us for some 30 minutes of their time, because I was told they are meeting at 9:30, so that we can allow the DG. So that's why I'm saying now, if as long as it's going to leave a strong team that is not going to postpone the questions, it can be able to respond on the spot, I will have to honor my agreement with the chair of the select committee of the NCOP on whatever. But any questions? Honorable Orema, Honorable Schmidt, Honorable Mafolo, Honorable Piginini. Okay. Honorable Schmidt, Honorable Orema, Honorable Mafolo, Honorable Piginini, so that I don't forget. Let's start with you, Honorable Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is two remarks before I put my question. The one is, this is a very one-sided document, with due respect. It looks at the industry, but it doesn't look at any other factors. It doesn't look at what government has done, not done. It doesn't look at what Labour has done or not done. And looks at the industry side of it. And as you know, jobs is the most important focus, and particularly in this regard, the mining industry. So anything that should be done to retain jobs is of utmost importance. But then again, I also thought of the, when someone is sworn in, you know, it's normally said, must tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing else but the truth. Now, I get the impression that not the whole truth is here today. You've placed a one-sided version to the committee, which is your prerogative, but it is not the whole truth. It is not the full fact. And why I say so, there's a document which by the Minerals and Petroleum Board, which you just mentioned, handed to the minister in January 2017, compiled by this board, or on the instruction of this board. It contains, and I'm sure you would have a copy of it. So, the truth is, there's a Minerals and Petroleum Board which you referred to. The whole truth would say, there is a report compiled by the Minerals Petroleum Board, presented to the minister in 2017, which clearly he has not read. Or, if he's read it, he hasn't applied it. But it contains, at least, and I'm paging from it, 26 proposals, 26 recommendations, which at least tries to encompass all the issues relevant, not three issues which is intended to put the industry in a bad light. Now, I'm not saying the industry is a saving grace. What I'm saying is put all the facts on the table. Don't inform the committee on a one-sided basis and then think that is what is the ruling situation out there. Now, four things from this report. The most important part of it. You can go read those 26 recommendations. I would suggest that we have another meeting to discuss all these issues, because all 26 of these recommendations need to be considered by the committee. Not three of those. And four, the most important four, highlighted by this report, is that it should be a clampdown on illegal mining activities. It boils down to a clampdown on illegal mining activities. You've referred to Sibanye-Stillwater. Sibanye-Stillwater closed down because 10,200 employees lost their jobs because of illegal mining, a consequence flowing from, inter alia, from illegal mining. What do we do about that? We've seen the evidence, we've seen some of the efforts done by the government, but is it enough? Secondly, trade union rivalry. Trade union rivalry, in particular areas such as Lonmin, is one of the biggest problems we have concerning production. I think there's something like, I'm not sure what the figure is, but something, massive figures, let's put it that way, of something like 500,000 work hours lost, man hours lost, because of trade union rivalry. That's a fact. That's an important fact, which this department does not seem to think it necessary to inform this committee. Lack of modernization partnerships between government and the private sector. We are not going to ensure the continued survivability of this industry. There is no coordination between private sector and government in terms of modernizing this industry. And it will not help by putting a report before this committee, attacking the mining industry without putting all the facts before the committee. The last thing, one of the most important issues, political agendas and corruption. That includes the regulatory uncertainty and the corruption that is accompanied by some of these issues. Then I would like to add, an effective and untarnished minister. We need a minister who is untarnished by any of these allegations, whether it is a recent Gupta issue or not. We need a minister who has the support of the mining industry, of the unions, and of government. It does not help that he only has the support of certain unions, of government, and very little of industry. Those are the most four important issues. I've added the points of the minister. But those four issues are the most important criteria. And government has as much a role to play as industry has a role to play. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
This report is a masterpiece of avoiding reality, following on from what my honourable colleague has said. In many ways, what we've seen in this report is a list of exactly what is wrong with our mining industry. Reality is avoided. Let's talk about some of that reality. In the last 4 to 5 years, 70,000 jobs have been lost. I didn't see that in this report. Since the announcement of Mining Charter 3, we've been given notice that 23,000 more jobs are going. Now, we were told about the AngloGold 8,500. We were told about Sibanye, but not a figure. Well, the figure they've given is 7,400. Royal Bafokeng says 500 are going. Atlatsa Bokoni has given differing figures, but it seems from the local media that 5,600 jobs are going. Lonmin says 1,000 jobs are going. That's 23,000 since the middle of June, since the announcement of Charter 3. The only mention we heard here of Charter 3 was as a palliative measure which would assist in job losses. Well, it's not going to assist. It's going to make them a lot worse. Now we ask ourselves, what's going on? Is this because of prevailing international conditions? Is this because something out there is causing it to happen? Well, we've just come back from Western Australia. They're not losing jobs there. In fact, their mining industry is picking up. How come ours are going down? No mention in this report of the Chamber taking government to court. That's a key issue. That affects confidence in the industry. Until you start facing up to that, you will have no clue on how to solve these problems. This report is a great example of the adversarial relationship between the department and the mining industry. Look at slide 7. Multinational companies tend to focus on the declaration of dividends to shareholders than in retaining employees. I suppose that means rather than in retaining employees. Well, guess what? Mines are in business to make money. When you put your pension money with a fund manager and it decides to invest in a mine, do you think that you will be happy when the pension fund manager says, well, we didn't get any investment for you, no pension this month because we decided to keep jobs instead? There seems to be no concept in this department as to how the industry works or how a modern economy works. On the same page, bloated structures at head offices than operational mines. Well, again, this is PowerPointees, but I think that means that they're the bloated structures at head offices. Let me tell you about a platinum company that I went to and who told me that since the advent of the MPRDA in the early 2000s, they had to employ 20 lawyers at head office solely to deal with compliance issues. Bloated staff? You bet. Why? Directly as a result of the regulatory burden imposed by this government's mining laws. Section 8, we go back to companies declaring dividends. Well, if companies can't declare dividends, they won't put their money here. We'll have no investment in mining. People invest in mining to make money. They can't make money, they won't invest in mining. Once again, I use the Western Australian example. They have a flourishing mining industry. Why? Because the government there realizes that companies are there to make a profit. If they don't make a profit, they won't be there. What happens here? Nobody wants to put their money here because they get bashed by government if they try and make a profit. So, We don't get any mention of the lack of confidence. We don't get any mention of the looming new version of the MPRDA. It's almost 4 years since this Parliament passed that. Still floating around Parliament, nothing there. There's no certainty in our regulatory jurisdiction. Charter 3. It's a big thing. 50 billion rand overnight loss in share value. That really should be a clue that something is wrong with it. So this entire failure to see reality results in misdirection. It's all very well talking about the future forums and Section 52 and getting essentially a soft landing for mining employees. But until you start addressing the causes of the decline of our mining industry, nothing will change. In fact, it'll only get worse. It's a bit like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic or putting a plaster on a sucking chest wound. It may make you feel better, but it's really not going to help the patient very much. So until this department and this government accept the fact that government policy is the problem, it won't be able to start fixing it because it won't change that policy. And if this department really cares about people's jobs, they will wake up to reality. DG, if you want to understand the challenges facing mining companies, and I'm sorry he's not here, you should start listening to them when they ask for regulatory certainty. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Let me welcome the presentation. Chairperson, I think it's very important to say that as the member of this parliament deployed by the ANC, we support the minister and we welcome the initiative that he's taking to make sure that we cross this bridge. And Chairperson, I think what Honorable Smith has said, that this department doesn't need the minister who's doing what. It's very unfair because last time when we wanted to call the minister and ask him questions, the DA refused. Now today, they want to come and tell us that the minister is clouded by some issues that they do not even themselves do not knowing that, because they could have allowed the minister to come here. And we really know as the ANC that the work of the opposition parties here is only to protect the white monopoly capital. Let me go to the presentation. Thank you. Chairperson, I just want to know that is there any time frame for these future forums to be in place, and what's going to happen if those companies doesn't implement this? Because to my knowledge, this is a very important forum that will assist us in the future. And then, have you ever encountered any problem with the companies that have signed the stakeholder declaration and then they don't adhere to it? And what's happening to that? And can you just tell us how many companies have signed and how many? In fact, how many companies do we have future forums and the others who doesn't have for now? And then, no thanks. Let me stop there.
Operate. The reality here, that you departments work with these companies, whilst they are working together with the companies, there are challenges that are taking place in that process. Now, I would love to say that the intervention that you have shown in this report, trying to salvage jobs, it's a work towards the right direction. At least you have started to do something about it. Now, we have also to blame these companies always want to retrench workers. The issue here, the department will never more than employ people. Ours is to create a conducive environment for investment all the time. That's our major job. And once you do that, our role now that is important, that we must master it, is to oversee it and make it a point that they do deliver in their promises, when they promise their investment and they do that kind of agreement between the department and the companies. I think if we master that, we'll be able to go forward, Chair. So really here, through the objective of the future forums, I foresee a situation where we'll be able to harness the situation. Now we need a future forum that are vibrant, that are operational, that are able to take us from where we are in going forward, where there will be a consultation between the worker and the employer. Those issues, we need to have a live, a vibrant future forum. Now, this program that I'm talking with is a very good program and a good initiative. But when you do that, you know, in our own history, where we come from, we must not move away from that. We have never been consulted through a future forum in our where we come from. Now things have changed for the better in the small space of time of 23 years. Now, this government has created institutions, rather be justice, rather be whatever. But today, we wanted to make sure that we have equal footing as a citizen of this country. That's where we're moving to. This now, I would love a situation where these future forums and this kind of report that you have tabled to us to go forward with it, because it's a process towards the right direction. That's why we want to see change. And we'll always support you and this committee if you do things right. You know, the mechanization that is there, processes today that have been established, this government want us to go forward together. We can't just go and be an equal to people who are leading for us for more than 300 years. But we are going there, we want to see our investment. So I'm trying to say that today is very good, and I'm very happy with the report that are given to us. I think we must keep doing what is good, trying to address. Favorable, so let's look to the interests of workers at all times. So we want that type of a government that we must always do that. Now, we hear this good report of yesterday that in terms of the GDP, we are moving forward. 2.5 now in this last two quarters. It means going forward, we are going to go more. It means this government is trying, is turning the corner now. Let's appreciate that. Let's not demoralize your department when in the work that you are doing presently. Because you have been really one part that has assisted there. Because we hear about the minerals resource department, we are hearing about agriculture that are helping to turn the corner. Let's keep up and make sure that we have plans going forward. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Some of the comments that were made by members, we are really appreciating it, and we will continue to implement the recommendations that have been coming forth from members. Honourable Chairperson, I think when, as a department or as government, creation of jobs it's the most critical part, and it's our responsibility. There are different sectors that one can invest in, but one of the things that we require in the mining sector, where the minerals belong to the people, is that the companies that are coming in must be able to create jobs. And the message that we are saying to the companies is that where there are genuine challenges that makes them not to maintain the jobs that they've promised, they must come to the table and discuss with us, and we find solutions together with labor, with industry, with all affected parties, including other government departments. And our minister, Minister Mseven, has been very good at this. He has been meeting with the companies, he has been meeting with organized labor, so that we can all find solutions together. The board has started working, and they are engaging with companies. There are recommendations that have been made, and they are implemented in different streams. Issue of illegal mining, we came to this committee and we presented to show that it is a threat to the mineral resources of the country, and we need to find solutions together to curb it. And we are implementing all those recommendations. It's not like the recommendations that came from the board, we just looked at it and not implement. So there are specific questions that I will ask my colleague to deal with. But overall, it's our commitment and our call to the industry to work with us in maintaining the jobs. And we will not settle until we make sure that most of the jobs are saved and we continue to enforce compliance, because we are the regulator and our role is to ensure that there is compliance at all times. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, CFO. I think at the beginning of my presentation, I did make a clear mention that we appreciate that where an investment has come in, dividends have to be declared. But I think we need to be equally also honest with each other, that where in declaration of dividends, if you have to look at the issues of meaningful economic participation, which is what we're trying to achieve, in the declaration of dividends, that happens to your multinational companies, we have seen no value accruing to historically disadvantaged South Africans, which are called BEE partners. And our study of 2014 has shown that, though the Chamber of Mines has disputed that, but we have seen no value accruing to the HDSAs, and we need to be balanced when we talk about that. Now, we are saying, we appreciate that companies must declare dividends because they are investors and because they have put money into the business. But the honest reality is that if you go to many of the companies that are sitting in Santam, you will find a duplication of responsibilities. You will find that, for instance, there is a black CEO and a white COO. And the COO, you find that is managing the CEO because there is no trust from our board that HDSAs can run these companies. That is one of the few examples. As Chairperson, you had already alluded to, that the DG had to leave at 10. The DG is attending a meeting where they're responding to the select committee on the comments that we have received as a department on the MPRD bill. To address the issue of future forums and timeframes, when we grant a mining right, the social and labor plan immediately requires that the company must set up a future forum. And failure to do that within the time that the mine has commenced to run, it's non-compliance. And we have been managing that. That's why I mentioned in the presentation that we manage that through issuing of statutory notices to the companies. on the issue of the stakeholder declaration, yes, there were companies that did believe that they do not want to be part of the stakeholder declaration, but because they are chamber members, chamber had to sign on their behalf. So hence they do adhere to the stakeholder declarations. There are companies where we have challenges with their future forums. I can mention one because it was recently raised with us, and it is Impala Platinum. And yes, it is correct that robbery of in what is termed robbery in organized labor causes a challenge. And in Impala, the challenge of the future forum is because you have two separate unions which do not totally agree with each other. Anglo Gold Ashanti, you have the same scenario. The unions do not agree with each other.
Okay. Let me start here to say that maybe it will help for just to address first the first thing. Probably it's correct that it's only a presentation by the department, but the intention is to interact with all the stakeholders that are dealing with the issue of mining. So surely we will have to, if it means in what we are going to propose in terms of the oversight, we'll have to engage with the Chamber of Mines, we'll engage with the union. Just want to say this first, you know, if we have never seen or experienced something of someone losing a job, I just want to say this to all honorable members. We have then not been, you know, to lose a job is to die alive. You lose dignity, you lose almost everything and anything. And our task and our duty as people that have been seized with this task, all of us, is that whilst we can deal, and I'm not referring specifically to it, but I must put this question, that we can have our own space to politics. From us, we say this and others. The reality is that people are losing their jobs. No matter how much we try and outscore each other, is not going to resolve the problem that people are losing their jobs. So we must first attend to that question. And I'm saying this thing because we have to look at all avenues, almost every avenue, at a practical level. For an example, in terms of your section 189A, which is a question I would have asked, is that retrenchment must become the ultimate issue at the end, that there was nothing else that could be done. And I must be honest, in that presentation, that's why I'm saying you can only deal with that if you interact with all the stakeholders. To come to the point, before you retrench, what else would you have done? And I was listening to the report as it was presenting. I don't want to assume that it's magic. Now, let me be honest, I'm not ridiculing you. I don't think it's a magic that the numbers at some point were 8,000, then reduced to 2,000 something, then reduced to 800 and something, then reduced, I think ultimately, is 41. Surely we must be able to understand what is it that has made these numbers to come up to the point where it's 41? And has that model that would have reduced these numbers from so high to 41 being used as the best practice model? I'm just saying, for me, that is the crux that I'm interested in. How? Because it says to me, from a point of a potential to lose jobs, there might be some scientific method that is not being applied. And immediately that scientific method is applied and everyone puts their hands on the deck, you're then able to reduce. I'm just saying, that's the point I was saying, that in as much as we may appreciate, sometimes you are told there will be retrenchment and then there are no retrenchments at all. What is it that would have happened, that would have made that they should be, they'll end up not being retrenchments? So I'm just saying, in this, in the report, I take the background and everything, but I want to pin down something that could be an example to say, in this company, for an example, when they wanted to retrench 6,000 jobs, we pointed, I think we were trying to make that example to say, sometimes on your rehabilitation program, workers get not being accommodated, and therefore, the people who are dealing with rehabilitation, they take external workforce to do the rehabilitation because workers are not trained. But I'm not saying you must come with it now, but it would be nice to have a sense to say, I'm just making an example. At this mine, so-and-so, this company, so-and-so, this was the number of workers. With the intervention, whether of the board or whatever, the following things were pinned down. Generally, maybe in some cases when you negotiate, you then say a job is better than not having the work at all. I'm just making an example. Therefore, we had to reach a point where there would be no increases at all in order to retain. You understand what I'm trying to say? By example, what is it that becomes this crucial point of compromise to an extent that we can save the jobs? So that we can weigh this thing. I can't get that thing. So I think, unfortunately, I may not be able to get it because the department is a facilitator in the process with others. But I'm sure the board that you're talking about is more stakeholder, multi-stakeholder arrangement. So I'm just saying, for me, from a point of view, I must be able to pin down so that when we go out there and say people are losing their jobs, or we've saved jobs, I know the effort, the tactics, the strategies, the actual nitty-gritties that would have secured this. I don't want to move, that's why I said, I don't want to move from this assumption that the mining industry this quarter has increased by 3.9, and therefore, that's why I said, if it's increased by 3.9, what is it that we did, or what is it that was done to increase up to 3.9, so that we can build from that increase of 3.9 onwards. For now, I think some of the things, they just happen, like, with due respect, I do go to church and not there. But we can't deal with things as if the Holy Spirit just fell and therefore we ended up in the 3.9. We must be scientific. So that's why I'm saying, my opinion is that we will deal with other issues, whether we've done correct policy choices. The reality is that, for now, workers are losing their jobs. I can tell you an example in the one company that senior managers decided to go to Victoria Falls. They spent all the money and everything. When they came back, workers had to face a reality that there was no money. Whether that money was spent in Victoria Falls and so forth, they realized there was no money. It was not going to come. So they had to deal how they manage the fact that there is no money at that moment. So that in future then you can say, no, never go back to Victoria Falls and entertain yourselves when you have not. But you can't say you went to Victoria Falls as if when you came back from Victoria Falls, you spent money, there will be money. It won't be there, regardless of the circumstances that would have happened. So I would say, probably if we meet again, we must be able to get that area. So that from this committee point of view, and I'm not denying this thing, whether there's legislation is another debate. From this committee point of view, we can then say, we can do this thing without putting regulation. Or we say, quite clearly, in order for this to work, as long as this is voluntary, now we must make it compulsory. I'm just making an example.
For now, I'm not sure how we'll arrive at what is the best method to do to mitigate against your job losses. I'm not saying it is a failed exercise. We now want to pin, for me, I want to pin down the nitty-gritties of what is it that we can do, not that it's a one-size-fits-all. Other issues, I think, for me, I would have said, the only thing I like, Honorable Schmidt, is that politics are a nice field to be in sometimes. It's so nice that the Democratic Alliance will have a document that the ANC is in government, doesn't have that document. So it's a nice thing. So it means when, it means, now that's what I'm saying, it means there is a clear separation of powers where those who are not in the executive won't get the information. Can we then say, I don't want us to go to the, can we then say, at the center of this, and I think it's correct, now, the only thing I like about you, you raised the document, you didn't distribute it, you just said there's a document. That's good. Is it possible that prior us calling other stakeholders, we can get any information? The last time we had this information was when we were dealing with the declaration of stakeholders. Can we get, I don't want to quote that document, can we get any existing information that is at the disposal of the department that can help all these honorable members to come to the same conclusion on the type of documented information that can relate to? Even if, I don't answer, even if it includes that those recommendations that were made by the board. So that from a committee point of view, we can move from the same things. I think that is what I wanted to suggest. I'm not closing anyone, please. Honorable Schmidt, was your hand up? Honorable Lorimer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I'm a bit surprised, if not flabbergasted, if not disappointed by the quality of report by the DMR in respect of probably one of the most important issues, and that's jobs. It's all about jobs. I don't think this report is good enough. In fact, if this is the indication of this department's approach towards preventing jobs being lost and being created, it is by far going to fail. And now I can understand two reasons why we are failing. Because this is the approach. There should be a document underlying your presentation. There should be documents given to the MP saying, read this stuff and come back to the committee and let's discuss it. But, you know, when one person loses his job, as I understand it, 1.7 jobs are lost in the process downstream. 1.7, more than the person who loses his job. And 10 dependents lose their livelihood. And this is the approach by the DMR. If this approach is good enough, according to the ruling party, you're going to lose many more jobs before anything is being done. That's basically why I'm so upset. But more importantly, there's a Mani Pakisa document. Have we seen it? Have you seen the Mani Pakisa document? We haven't seen it. It's 2015, it's history. And this department has not thought 1 minute to present this with a document. Not one document. Mani Pakisa indicates to us, apparently, what is said in that document. And how to address some of these job losses. Nothing is done, nothing is said about it. No presentation is made. The trade union rivalry. There's a declaration, stakeholders declaration. And as I understand it, there was an agreement that, let's call it a democracy prevails. In other words, if let's say a trade union is 55% of the sport, it gets 55% of the union representatives and so forth and so forth. Some minds are now apparently indicating a majority union approach. What is the mining companies, or what is the DMR doing about it? Do they approach the mining companies and say, listen, this is leading to a problem. This is leading to a lack in production. Why is the DMR antagonistic towards the industry? When the outcomes should be the same, why isn't DMR saying, listen, we'll help you address the issues of the union. We'll help you address the issues of a lack of investment in modernization and expansion. No, you go and you attack the industry, and then you expect more investment to prevent more job losses. But you're doing exactly the opposite of what you should be doing. And then you come here and you give us a one-sided picture and say, this is what we are doing. Then you expect the industry will get a copy of this document because it's on the internet. If you come and say, sorry, this is what we will do, you're not going to get the cooperation of the mining industry in this way. When you're attacking them, being adversarial to approach to them, and then you expect them to your cooperation. Then, one of the issues also to be addressed is Section 54 and Section 52, 55 and Section 54 stoppages. How do you expect people to be employed, continue to be employed, when you overreact to a mining incident, which shouldn't happen, but if it happens, why do you overreact? That's the problem. Section 52 of the MPRDA and Section 189 of the Labour Relations Act. Those two issues, I know there's a court case that says they can run concurrently or they can run consequentially, but shouldn't there be an approach to say, one approach, this is the process you follow? There is unity, a disunity between industry and DMR and CCMA, who's also involved in this process. But once and for all, you know, why don't you sort out these things when the issues are about jobs and job creation and then attacking the industry? I still don't understand how you get the cooperation of someone you are taking an adversarial stance. I still don't understand it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I echo those sentiments completely. I think this was a really substandard report. The scary thing would be if one was to ask, is this the best that you can do? I think the answer might be yes, this is the best the department can do, and that's an indictment on the department. Mr. Chair, I applaud your idea for having all the relevant documents produced. If I could ask that one of those documents be a comprehensive report on the mining Pakisa.
Okay. Let me just cut this thing now, because I know when we debate, we'll end up having the longest of the debates. When we're finalized, I'll come back. I will chair, but I'll be fair at the same time, and I'll engage. Because I think some of the issues are bordering on the fact that we need to be sensitive. Currently, as we speak, we've got workers that are almost 2 years underground. And I will say next time why I'm raising that issue. By the way, the department is still going to come to us and say, was it something that could have been avoided? That's why I'm saying, let's leave. I'll leave it now. Next time, I want to declare upfront. When everything has been dealt with, we'll then deal with the politics of a country that is to move forward, and objectively, what is the role of an institution like Parliament in facilitating that process. I'm just saying, at that point, I will come back, and I will deal with the issues in a manner that is fair. But I think one of the things, maybe as a committee, is that we shouldn't reduce ourselves too much to technical issues. We must also deal with the political side. I'm willing to enter that debate. The problem, let me say this on the other side, the process of the mining Pakisa, to the best of my understanding, all the Pakisas are handled in the presidency, particularly by the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation. When Mr. Ish, now I must be careful, Rudy, you see now the problem, that pronunciation can put you in trouble. So the inside Mr. Rudy was here, he did also raise that issue about the Pakisa. And I'm not sure how we can get around that, because I've seen other Pakisas, they seem to be moving. I don't know what could be the problem in mining. So I think the department on that one is hamstrung. They can't do anything because I doubt even themselves they know mostly about what that particular outcome is. I would suggest, I think from a committee's point of view, that we must get certainty on the PAKISA issue. I used to volunteer. These days, they have decided, because every time I take an initiative, it's like I didn't do anything. Otherwise, I would have suggested a better way of handling this thing. And I think it's a duty. I don't think we should run away from that. We've got a responsibility. We are members of parliament. In Zulu Kasafuma, we accepted that responsibility. We will go and say, can we get the issue of the status of mining practice? We will see whether we are winning or not, how it comes. But I think the point that must be taken is that, can the department go back within its own powers? First, try and, I don't want to make people, sometimes officials, they feel guilty, don't know. That's why politicians. Can you go back and then bring in the flesh, the nitty-gritties, on typical cases of what could have been, what interventions that practically we can talk about that are able to reduce or to mitigate to some degree against job losses. I gave you an example. In other cases, you find that workers are taken from this because not a productive man to the other. Sorry. The question of trade union rivalry, we'll have to look at that issue. Because sometimes union density is determined according to the Labor Relations Act, and therefore some of the problem might have more to do with the interventions that can be done by the Department of Labor. We will have to look deeper into those things. But rivalry is good, as long as it doesn't hamper progress. So I can see even in this committee, we do have rivalry in this committee. But that rivalry is a nice one because it can take us forward. We can agree what needs to be done. The third point that I think it's important is that we need now, because this is serious and it's very urgent, we need to have also information that can be presented to us by all the other stakeholders. That is in particular the organized business and labor in the industry. Then I think from that point, when we've got this broader picture, we will then be able to come back as a committee, make serious deliberations, and if it needs, for example, to borrow from even other committees like your Department of Labor, from your Portfolio Committee on Labor, we will see whether we can put things together with them. Is that not a fair summary, honorable members? Any mover? If there is agreement. Honorable Mafolo?
That's fair, Chairperson. I move for it. Chairperson, I second that move.
Being that case as it may, can we now go to the report on the Northwest visit? Do you want me to read to go start with the pages? Page 1. You must know that the next one has got 42 pages. Page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6, Page 7. Page 8. Page 9. Page 10. Page 11. Page 12. Page 13. Page 14. Page 15. Page 16. Page 17, can I deal with the findings so that at least the following observations is that too few blacks are mining industrialists. Rustenburg is at the center of the nation's mineral riches, yet the MR has not succeeded in growing the number of black-owned mines and ensuring that the people share in the wealth, in the mineral wealth. The question of, we are dealing with the question of the mine inspectors, which are almost at 40%, and the area is an area that is requires much more of your mine inspectorate. Then the next one is the question of the community, the conflicts that are there in dispute in mining. Therefore, there has to be interventions that are made, if possible. The question of the BEE, which is still below 6%, the issue of emerging mining companies, who have got the challenge of ownership due to the strict rules that are put by the funding institutions or companies. That is the rest that goes up to page 18. Then the recommendations, the need to devise a strategy that will position black miners to enter the sector. 3, the regional office to motivate for the funding of inspectors and increase from that 40% vacancy rate, which is, in our view, not acceptable. Deal with the question of effective way to protect community investments in mines in order to avoid the frictions. The issue of a funding model with regards to the project of BE ownership, especially with regards to the issue of decision making. Then the issue of a common framework in relation to the farmers in terms of the exorbitant funds, fees that are being asked from those who are dealing with exploration and mining. That rest goes up to page 19. Any comments? Honorable Schmidt?
Mr. Chair, on page 18, 1, towards the bottom of the page, paragraph A. Rather B. It says black mine developers should give government funding to create the studies. I guess it's not the intention to fund the likes of Toko Sekwale and Cyril Maposa and those people to develop their mines. So I think that black mine developers should be put differently, whether it's small scale mine developers or junior mine developers, because we already have a problem with concentration of wealth in the hands of a few, instead of broad-based. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Honourable Lorim.
Mr. Chair, in the recommendations by the committee, There's a whole raft of, I mean, this is just the tip of the iceberg about a whole range of issues here. About 11.3, the DMR should make a proposal to the committee on the most effective way of protecting community investments in mines. The thing that I find disturbing is often communities are blocked from investing in mines which are happening on their own land. I think there should be some way of giving communities a first right to invest in mines on their own lands. But often you find that somebody from completely outside who comes in and invests there, and the communities are disregarded. The whole issue of how community involvement in mines should work needs to be looked at. This common framework of dealing with farmers. Well, what's the difference really between the farmers and people at Bolobeni? It's, in every case, I would submit, an effort to stop the mine going ahead on their territory. Mines have costs. You have noise, you have dust, you have all other kinds of things. People don't want mining on their territory, so they try and put the rent up. Or in the case of Bolobeni, there is strong resistance to a mine coming in. That whole issue needs to be addressed. I mean, this came up in Australia where we found out, you know, whether or not communities have a right to veto mining on their land. It's not just communities, but landowners. And I would like to see some proposals on a new way forward for this, because it's clearly not working as it is.
The first thing, I think let's agree, we can talk about the black emerging mine developers, if that's the issue, assuming that they are established one. The second one, I think the issue here deals with what is currently in existence. Maybe when we deal with the charter later on, we will talk about the second part of investment. Yeah, I thought this report in the main talks about what is happening now, that part of what you see as conflicts in communities is who must have control and authority over the path that is accrued, is currently accrued to the communities. But that is related to, it may then be an issue that we say it has to be find a way of how to manage that situation. It can be in future in a different legislation, or it can be what will come through the regulations that are in the mining charter, but I don't know. I thought here we're just highlighting that the department will be the one that will come and say what could be the best model that can be done in order to save as a custody for what is supposed to be accrued. So generally, it's already being accrued to communities. So it's not what will happen by investment. Now, when you go there and say, for an example, part of your SLP will be 1, 2, 3, part of what you take as royalties or shareholding is this amount, it directly leads to conflicts in the areas. So we are then saying what we have currently requires a better mechanism that the department can come and present to the committee on how to keep these funds. You will know, it's a fact, if you go to the Northwest currently, there are monies that were kept and they were this high, out of the blue, they are nowhere to be found. You see? Yes. You've got cases where communities themselves, there are people who are killed simply because someone must have access to what is accrued. So that's the question. Maybe we should just add one part, and the question of the formula expenditure of these monies in order to develop communities. Because for now, I think it's just we give to so-and-so, which is then people come later and say, but that person is not a legitimate one. We are the ones who are, that is what we're talking about. The point then, I think it can be an issue that will have to be considered later on. The question now of community investment, what mechanisms, including the question that you are raising, that they must get first priority when it comes to rights application. But here we're talking about what is currently in existence. Then on this question, I think it's an issue that we'll have to find a way. The point again is not saying it's treating this one different. It says when you look, exactly like you said, when you look on the farming communities, even when there is proximity, there is no something that would say a fair judgment. It means this one, this side can ask, as you say, can ask so much fees, and this one, this side, when you are almost sharing the proximity. So what it says is that, can there be a common framework that will assist? If it can't happen, we'll come back and say, no, it's impossible, it can't happen. Leave people to charge whatever they wish to charge. But the point we're saying is that if you are looking to those areas, it's going to take us to another debate for another day to say, who are these ones that seems to be charged more, and who are these others that may not be charged more? So that's the point it says, can we look, is there no way to look at a point of what could constitute an element of fairness in terms of requirements? Because I might go there today, I'm told this is how much you will pay. Mr. Rurima, Honorable Rurima might go there and he's told, no, no, you can come back. Maybe it's possible that in the same farm, when this one comes, these fees will be high. When the other one comes, the fees might be made reasonable, depending who is who. So that's, it's not a regulation. It's what could be a common base that can be looked at in terms of the framework. But if it's going to harm people, it's okay. But we're not saying it must be done now. We're saying, can that initiative be looked at for the sake of fairness in terms of the fees that are charged? It can apply to communities, but there we're dealing mostly, we were in the farms. Honorable Matlan?
Yes, Honorable Chair. In my view, Chair, I'm supporting what you said, because the two members of the DA were not part and parcel of honorable members who went for the oversight visit in Northwest. Deliberately so, we didn't know where they are. Some of the issues raised here on the report, Chair, these are true reflections of what expired, transpired in those meetings that we attended to. Issues raised by the communities of Bakubu and all those communities that we met, these are the issues raised by those communities. Therefore, Chair, I don't want us to waste much of our time here interrogating the report, which Tina, we're part of the people who went to Northwest on oversight visit. And these two people from the DA, honorable members from the DA, were not part and parcel of these things. I'm afraid, Chair, if you allow them to continue and interrogate the report, they were not part of us when we went to Northwest. We are going to spend the whole day here interrogating is, was, what comes before is and was. So I agree with you, Chair, that let's agree and close the chapter on the report from Northwest, and we'll consider and adopt the report. Those who were there, those were the only people who can adopt the report, because they've seen those things that is there. So you can't adopt and interrogate the report, which you are not part of that report. It's unfortunate, Chair. Let's agree and adopt the report, because we're there. Tina, we saw all the issues that the communities has raised. Some of them are in here. So we agree and close the chapter. Thank you very much.
I like your enthusiasm. Unfortunately, the reality that any member, even the one who may not be a member of this committee, will have a right to comment and engage on the report. That one is unfortunate, it's a reality. So your wish, unfortunately, is not based on the reality. I would have thought that when you stand up with the intervention, you would say, with the corrections or additions, you move so that we don't cut other members. They've got a right to participate. Now, the problem, you think that I can close the report. You are the one who would say you are moving the report so that we will get then any other view. And I'll begin in, was your hand up or in my follow? And then Lorima? My follow?
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is just to say that we take this report as it is. We agree that it is what we saw and observe. So I move for the adoption of the report as it is. Thank you.
Chair, I wish to second the motion. Thanks.
Of course I'm against it. If the other members think that we shouldn't be allowed to discuss these reports, then we're wasting our time here, frankly. We should just leave this committee, because it's not doing its work properly. Right. Well, I don't think we should close the close discussion of the report because it amounts to the same thing. I wanted to make one more point about recommendation 11.1. which says the DMR should devise a strategy to position more black miners to enter the sector, especially in Northwest Province. In that strategy, the DMR should also look at its own behaviour. And I want to tell you the story of two emerging black miners who I have had dealings with recently. One of them has been working to try and start a mine in a part of the country and has been trying to access geological information at the Council for Geoscience. Been unable to get in. A lot of the time can't get in. When he gets there, the samples are all in a mess because the place is completely disorganized. So that would help a lot to get junior miners to the sector if that information was accessible and organized. The second one, who spent a considerable amount of money trying to get a license application in, didn't hear from the department for months and months and months about his application, only to eventually go to the office and insist on being told what had happened, only to find out that the license application had been given to somebody else who he suspects is related to somebody in the department. The department has to make sure that its processes are honest and transparent, which they're clearly not at the moment. So when it looks at that strategy, it should please address those two issues.
Okay. When the department comes back, we will look at the strategy. What does it involve? What does it include? For now, I think this is just a point of emphasis to say, to must also say what the department is not limited. It's not saying it's general. It's not limited and excluding the department. That's why we say department must devise a strategy to position. Then when they come on the strategy, we will then deal whether the strategy is sufficient enough for our expectation as a committee. Having that being moved and seconded, okay. Can I give you 10 minutes to stretch your legs? No one must go because all of you are allowed to be here. Can we take 10 minutes break and then you'll come back? We are starting at 10 past 10. 10 past 11. Don't worry, sometimes anti-clockwise is allowed.